This is the Hot Lava Podcast. My name is Kevin Acey, Potter's beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner here with me. Well, actually, not here with me, but here with me. Jay, last time I stole your introduction, and it was really good. And so since they're going so well, I'm sure you have something poignant, pithy, really insightful to say about the Padres. Jay, I'm going to let you start to talk about this team that is the first in Major League Baseball to 30 wins.
Oh, sure. There you go again.
As it was coming out of my mouth, I said, I bet you that was it. Hey, first, I do want to say, I just realized I've bedhead, and just keeping it real here on the Hot Lava. Go ahead.
That's what the hat's for. anyway, among other things, I don't have bedhead. I have expanding forehead. Anyway, yes, the Padres are the first in baseball to 30 wins, and they have won 9 games in a row. I believe it's 12 out of 13.
It is.
Which means during that time of winning 12 out of 13, they've gained, I believe, one game on the Dodgers, who are equally as hot. The one thing that came to mind over the yesterday, actually, is as I watched the Fernando Tatis show, and he came up in the whatever inning that was with the bases loaded, and it was so funny because they never, when you're at the ball game, there's a lot of stuff you don't sometimes know what's happening because they don't announce anything, because apparently umpires have it in their contract where they don't actually have to speak to anybody, including the people who pay their salaries. But Cronenworth was up with a base empty yesterday, and the first pitch, all of a sudden the umpire was pointing to first. He was running down to first base, and I noticed Angel Hernandez was pointing at the catcher, doing this with his glove. People who are listening can't hear that, but he was motioning that it was catcher's interference. So I kind of figured that that's what it was, but there was no replay. You couldn't tell what happened. And then on the scoreboard, they put up that big graphic and it said, walk, walk, walk. And I'm like, I don't think that the Mariners and Scott Service walked Jake Cronenworth to load the bases for Fernando Tatis Jr. As he came up, I said to my wife, he can't, right? He can't. And she said, no, he can. And sure enough, he can. And that was as long a home run as I've seen, about as long as home run as I've seen. I'll put it this way. I've never seen anybody hit the ball where Tatis hit it yesterday, which was over that hedge to the left of the batter's eye. I remember Andrew Jones hitting one way up towards the scoreboard and everything. But I think they said it was 447. It was every bit of that. He had a 441, I believe, in the first time up. And he's incredible right now. They play a tape when you walk into the ballpark of calls from Orsillo and Grant, I believe, from last year. And one of them's from a defensive play, and Mark Grant says you're a cartoon character or something like that, and that's what it feels like right now. Since he came back, he feels like a cartoon character. Like nobody could be this good. I think in his last 6 games, counting right before he departed, his OPS is like 2100 or something. Just I completely obscene like that. It's just we've talked a long time, Kevin, about having players like this, being lucky enough to have players like this on the team that you watch every single day, whether it's as a fan or as a media member or whatever. And right now, I mean, the Padres and their fans are extremely fortunate to have someone like Tatis and to have him under contract for this long. And it's remarkable. That's the only thing. I mean, you can't really describe it, but we're running out of words, and he's 22 years old.
But you said a few things in there that really are, I think, worth exploring. First off, your wife says, yes, he can. So Julie's a believer, and I see how this marriage works. We got the optimist, we got the pessimist.
You've seen it long before this.
Yes, I have, but I love to hear, reinforcement. I'm glad it's working there. The fact that he can, the fact that he constantly does, and when I say constantly does, it's baseball. It's not every time up, but he's Michael Jordan, right? You Michael Jordan didn't hit every game-winning shot, but damn, he hit a lot of them, and that's what Fernando Tatis Jr. is, and that is the specialness. That's what special people do. Special people forced their way onto the team when the team had no intention of putting him there as a 20-year-old. And then they have a few games of getting ready. And by the second week of the their rookie season, they're one of the most sensational players in baseball. And they do it time and time and again when people say, no, it can't happen now. The other thing you said, he's a video game. Jay, you know, it's funny that the situation that I'm in now, I'm on social media, unfortunately, sometimes. I write for this thing called the Internet, and then I write for the newspaper. And the demographics of the newspaper, the person who goes to the end of their driveway or has it slid next to their door, is a little older. And sometimes I get messages from them that the game has become a video game, or, you know, and they're whatever. It's and I try to be respectful. I get it. But if every team had a Fernando Tatis Jr., it wouldn't matter, right? Like this guy makes it all worth it for whatever age you are, because I hear from them also that, like, I don't like all that bat flip stuff, but it's okay when Tatis does it. Yep. Because he's so special. And you know what? It just feels genuine. Yeah. I'm glad that we can talk about this guy in so many different ways. Not only is it like fun to just watch him, but he makes this team better in ways that you don't really even think about. I mean, you talked about no way they'd want Cronenworth. Well, duh. But there's so many other ways that he makes this lineup better. You got Hosmer batting fifth and Myers batting sixth. That's what this thing was dreamed up to be. This lineup is good again. And that's without Machado and Grisham, for goodness sake.
Yeah. And we can get into a little bit more. I still question whether Tatis should be hitting cleanup. It's obviously worked great for these four games. I still don't like having him that far down. I mean, that far, it's really more one place more than I would consider.
You like three.
To be ideal. Yeah. I think two or three is better, for him. And I don't know if that means if what you do with Cronenworth. I mean, if Cronenworth's going to keep hitting like this, you know, he can be wherever in the lineup. I mean, you really don't want to take at bats away from sort of any of these guys right now. I think Machado still strikes a lot of fear into opponents, so people get good pitches to hit, you know, around him. But yeah, I mean, if you have a top six in your order, like you talked about, and even if it's a top seven with Austin Nola when he's catching, and then whoever happens to be in left field. But top six, if you had in whatever order, Grisham, Machado, Tatis, Cronenworth, Hosmer, Myers, Nola, that's a pretty good lineup. And, you know, you have a rotation that has Darvish and Snell and Musgrove and look, guys like Paddock and Weathers have pitched great lately. I do think as we go forward, this trip will be interesting because, I joked to you over the weekend that, and I also joked to Jeff Sanders, who did a good job in your absence for a couple of days, that the Padres are sort of, this was a week where it felt like they were playing AAA teams. And look, the Rockies and the Mariners are major league teams. The Rockies came back from the debacle against the Padres and played great against the Diamondbacks, or at least better than the Diamondbacks. They're major league teams. They win games. They don't go out and lose all the time. But the Padres handled those two teams the way that we talked about at the beginning of the year, that you should handle teams like that. They didn't necessarily do it with the Pirates. The kind of a game or two got away from them there. But that's, you know, it's baseball. It happens. But this last week, especially, and the Cardinals certainly did not look like a good team when they were here, especially their pitching staff, which I guess their bullpen is like on a record pace right now for walks or walk rate. But anyway, the Cardinals are, you know, a pretty good team. The Padres swept them. The Rockies are not a good team, but the Padres took care of business. The Mariners are not a good team right now. Padres took care of business. Now they go in, play Milwaukee, which has not been great, but their offense especially has been horrible. It's been just about as bad as Seattle's, actually. But Christian Yelich is back. Four games there. They're facing Woodruff and Burns the next couple nights, two guys who, you know, pitch great here. The Padres got swept by the Brewers, as we recall, back here at Petco. Then they go to Houston, which is obviously a good team, on to Chicago, which I'm not sure if they're a good team, but they're not bad. They've got a lot of good players. Andy Green 1-0 as a manager after last night's game.
This Hot Lava Padres podcast segment is brought to you by Jack Powell Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram, located in Escondido and serving the San Diego community for over 60 years.
It's springtime, and that makes everything more fun. And at Jack Powell Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Escondido, we find it fun saving you money during our Memorial Day sales event. buy now and save with 0% APR financing for 72 months on new 2021 select make and models we have in stock. So, if you need a new vehicle and another reason to smile and have fun, visit Jack Powell Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram online or in Escondido, San Diego, serving the San Diego community for over 60 years, where we make shopping easy.
So this trip, if we want to morph into talking about this trip yet, or whenever we do, this trip will be very interesting to see sort of where the Padres stand against better teams. Look, the Padres are not going to sweep every series for the rest of the year. They're probably not even going to sweep the next series, but they just need to continue to, you know, to do what they've done the last week and play good baseball. And when that happens, they're going to win games.
Depending on how the games go, I mean, you could have a game where you felt like you let one get away, but let's just say at the outset, this is now the type of trip where you go 6-4, you say, hey, good trip. There you go.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's, yeah. And that's, you know, heck, that's baseball, right? What these 9-0 runs, what these 12 out of 13 runs, that's what good teams do so that when they go 5-5 or 6-4, they're still looking up at the end of the year, they have 95, you know, 99 wins, whatever. Right. This is how good teams do it. And here we are. I'm excited. We're almost to the 1/3 way. And I think it's shaping up about how we sort of envisioned it if the Padres were who we thought they are. Obviously, there's some anomalies, the way that Tommy Pham is hitting 193, I think it is. There have been some injuries. There's some storylines we're following here. Let's go to the pitching. Great point, by the way. Don't want to gloss over it. You got Woodruff and Burns. By the way, the paper here, if these guys keep pitching like this, has got to do some sort of play on, Woodward and Bernstein. If you've got Woodruff and Burns, I don't know what it is. It's a recreation of the movie cover. I don't know, but that's awesome. Every time in my brain, I have to self-correct before I say it out loud that they're facing Woodruff tonight. And he has been, holy smokes, 8 straight quality starts for Brandon Woodruff. And one of those obviously was the Padres I think it was 6 innings, 1 run. And then Burns, this is his first start back from the COVID IL. He's been out for a couple weeks. And so, both these guys sub 2 ERA. So this is different.
Yeah. Well, the Padres better hope Burns doesn't come back from COVID the way that Tatis did.
I was going to say, you know it's going to take him a while to get going. Oh, no, not. Plus, he's also walked 2 batters. So, you know, you can get a walk against him. This is a test. You just had Yelich is back. I was going to say, hey, this is cool. We get to watch Snell and Paddock and Musgrove try to build against a team that isn't scoring runs. But look, you never know when the Brewers are going to take off, and it's very, very interesting. Yu Darvish, the Padres are 9-1 when Yu Darvish starts.
Yeah.
That's the guy that you got. And so now, is Snell going to continue to be the guy that you thought that you got? Musgrove going to be the guy that you projected was about to take off in his career? And if Chris Paddock pitches like he has the last 3 starts, you got one of the best number 4 guys in the majors. Now, that's a capital if, Jay. Hopefully I'm going to talk to Chris today and talk about some of the new, the way his pitches are moving, the velocity, and see where we're at. Maybe have a little something for later in the week. But I think that's a real key. If you have one of the better number 4 starters in the majors, you're in good shape.
Right. And you talked about how the season is sort of shaped up like we thought, and it's doing that with the team right up the road as well, where the Dodgers, as we expected, have straightened things out, and they've had injury issues. Bellinger still isn't playing. I think Betts has been in and out. Corey Seager is out for a while now. But you talk about number 4 starters, and I mentioned this guy at the beginning of the year, Julio Urias. He might be their best pitcher, and he's like, quote unquote, their 4th starter. So again, but you're setting up if Paddock is that guy, and if you're going to play them in a series, although unfortunately it would probably be a 3-5 series, but if depending on how the schedule is, if you're going to need 4 starters, now you're looking at Buehler and Kershaw and Bauer and Urias that you're facing from the Dodgers. So you better have 4 pretty good guys as well. And right now, I think the Padres do, and then that gives you the ability to use Ryan Weathers out of the bullpen. Denelson Lamet falls into there somewhere. I mean, I did not get to see much of Saturday's game, but judging on what your report, he looked more like Denelson Lamet. In fact, why don't you tell me what I missed on Saturday night with Lamet? Because the last time he pitched, it was one of those one good inning, one awful little innings. What did Saturday night look like?
Saturday night was sustained. The slider was sustained. I'm not saying it was as good in the third inning as it was in the first, but the fact is, I think he took 41 pitches. Uh-huh. I'm like, hey, cool. He got stretched out another inning. He threw like two more pitches than he'd thrown or something. It was that good. He stayed up. He was still hitting 96 with the fastball in the third inning for three innings. That was about Denelson Lamet that mm-hmm. you expected. Now, that's the reason that I didn't include him as one of the starters is, hey, that's not who the Padres are anymore. We don't have to say, oh, hey, we hope Denelson Lamet.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Of course, Denelson Lamet being all that Denelson Lamet could be, that's what you want, and that's what is possible for the end of the year. Heck, with the rest that he's gotten, it's possible that Denelson Lamet is your strongest pitcher at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But right now, Denelson Lamet is a question mark. I would fully expect that as long as he came out feeling strong from those three innings, that it would go probably Ryan Weathers in the final game here, though it could be Lamet. And then one of them would probably start the first game in Houston. Though mm-hmm. obviously, if you're going to go with six-man rotation, Darvish could line up to start Friday. You can start playing with it a little bit. But I fully expect right. that as long as they feel like Weathers and Lamet can do it, that they're going to go to a six-man rotation as what? They have 17 more games before their next off day?
Right. Right. And then, as we mentioned, after that, another stretch of like 13, I think. So it's a run where they're going to need guys. And I think that makes Miguel Diaz important as well. I mean, I unfortunately did see the end of Saturday. I think, was it Saturday night's game when he pitched or Friday night, whichever game?
Friday
night, where he needed like 55 pitches to get through two innings. Yeah. With a 16-1 lead. That was a little bit. More of the Miguel Diaz we had seen a couple of years ago, less of the one that we've seen. But hey, it was one again. It's one outing. Not going to read anything into that. He's been good since he came back, and you know, the bullpen continues to be strong. And I think it got some good rest over the weekend, where you know Chris Matt was the only guy that was used yesterday. You know, Friday night's game was the same situation where you didn't have to use your really good guys. So that helps as well. I mean, now, you know, going into a situation where you've got all these games in a row, you're going to have to do some juggling out there. And it's going to give that Excel sheet that you have a pretty good workout.
It is. That's the Excel sheet has made me appreciate what this ridiculous schedule where they played 24 and 25. Then they had what, 4 days off and 10 days or something.
Yeah.
And so this time has really allowed them purposefully. And then, of course, with the starters going longer, to rest the bullpen. And I don't, you know, that's why I also throw in Nabil Chrismat as being important for games like yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's all. Give you two, three innings at the end of you're blowing someone out or they're blowing you out, because these are to have to bring in a Stammen or somebody when you don't want to or to give him extra innings. And that's just not something that is going to be helpful at all over the next 17 days. But, you know, you're right. To me, Jay, the story of this trip, the story of this series as they face Woodruff and Burns is, okay, now you're getting back into those occasional tests that you're going to have throughout the season. And certainly in Houston, you would expect that as well.
Right, right. No, I think that's really important. And then heading into Houston as well, I keep thinking there's always a part of me that thinks Milwaukee's in that this is like an interleague series as well. They're another American League team, but it's not like that. But in Houston this weekend, they will be able to use the DH.
Man, they would love to be able to keep Manny Machado off the IL and be able to use that series in Houston to get some guys days off their feet, but still in the lineup.
Right. And so where I guess that's the next question is, you know, sort of forgotten in this a little bit is that they ran this stretch against the Mariners, or against this entire stretch with people missing, and against the Mariners, you know, Grisham played four innings before he left Friday night and Machado didn't play an inning. And they swept anyway. Where it's always impossible to to guess on injuries, and especially with this team lately, trying to guess on injuries is more difficult than usual. But where do you think things stand with Machado and Grisham?
Well, it's interesting that Jace Tingler allowed that it's possible that one or both could go on the IL. I mean, to this point, let's be honest, we've already given the Mariners their due and everything, but, you know, it's okay. You figured you'd be okay. And if you drop the game against the Mariners, so be it. But trying to get Manny Machado healthy without actually putting him on the IL. But now you can go retroactive and he'd miss the rest of this week. And okay, if that's where they at. But they're also saying that these guys are both starting to feel better. I would imagine you come to the park today, and if he looks like he can play, he'll play, or maybe play tomorrow. Look, a lot of times you can find out from different people what the severity is or what is happening. I think Manny's really put the kibosh on this one. He doesn't want anybody to know what's wrong or that he's playing hurt, because I can't get it anywhere. The severity, how is it affecting him? Well, you know. But it's been clear. People have made passing remarks, and you can see it a little bit. And they've clearly given him the green light to sort of take it easy when he needs to. But this has been bothering him. And I think that explains a little bit of why he hasn't taken off yet. So now Grisham, he played through this thing for like a week. And then I don't know. I don't know that if he aggravated it or what. But I would expect in the next couple of days, they have to make a decision on whether these guys need to go on the IL, because right now their bench is extremely short if these guys can't play.
That was the point I was just going to make, is that at least you almost need them to be able to pinch hit, if nothing else, because right now, I mean, they have like a two-man bench among healthy people. I mean, you know, it works okay when you can call on a guy like Musgrove to come in and get a bunt down, but still, that's not the ideal situation. And as you play this week, I would think it would behoove them to be at closer to full strength than they are right now.
It's funny how adamant Jace Tingler was about pitchers hitting was just the worst, and the danger that guy's used pitchers as pinch hitters more than anybody in Padres history, and more than anybody in the majors this year. Now, it's been by necessity. I'm not like saying that he wasn't telling the truth, but it's just funny how it works. It's like, man, you sending up some of your good pitchers to hit awful lot.
Right. Well, I had to laugh. I only saw the end of the Cubs game last night, but they sent up Craig Kimbrell to hit in the 10th inning, because they had the lead and they wanted him to come and pitch the bottom of the 10th as well. And I think it was his second plate appearance of his career, or since 2015 or something along those lines. And he took like this mighty swing at one point, and I was thinking, what are you doing? You know, just stand up there and take some pitches. And that's, I think, the part that the managers have talked about, is that they're afraid of pitchers getting hurt, you know, hitting more than anything else. And you know, that's a good way to strain something is swinging like that when you're not used to it. And I think that's why I said with the Padres, it works a little better when you're doing it to have guys bunt, as long as they keep their fingers out of the way. I think that works a little bit better.
Well, so. Joe Musgrove's a nice weapon to have, as long as he stays healthy doing it. But because that guy can bunt, he can swing, you know, he's very knowledgeable. You saw him on the sack bunt. It was actually a really good bunt. At first, he's like, maybe I can get on base. Nope. Okay. I'm good. This is just a sacrifice. And he's a real weapon to have, but it's just funny to me how often he's hit. He sent Paddock up there. Weathers up there. It's been a funny season. I'll tell you what, I can hardly list all the things that have happened with this team already.
I know. I figured out Sunday, I believe Sunday is game 54. So we'd be that's the one third point at the end of Sunday heading into Memorial Day. And there's just been so many weird things that have happened already. And yet you look at the standings and there are the Padres at, you know, 30-17 and the Dodgers at 29-17. And that's something, if you had said at the start of the year, that's where those teams would be, everybody would have said, yeah, that's where those teams will be. You know, both on pace to win just over 100 games, although obviously that's buoyed a little bit by the Padres' recent hot streak. But still, it's all sort of worked out in the end. But how we've got to this point is not like anything that we could have expected.
To reiterate once again, as we start this 10-game road trip, six, and where we say, hey, 6-4 would be a successful road trip. That depends. Look, if they blow a 7-0 lead on Thursday and they end up 6-4, you'll be like, yeah, they could have been 7-3 or yeah. Bummer, but whatever. What these streaks of winning 12-13 and winning 9 in a row do is you can go 6-4, you can go 500 in stretches, and you're still going to end up with 95 wins. And that's what good teams do. It's been a long time, Jay. If they win their 10th in a row tonight, it will have been since 2009. That's the last time they had a streak of 10 games. Doesn't happen very often. You enjoy it. I thought one of the most magnificent statistics to come out of yesterday, the Padres going 9-0, because it shows you how rare it is and that it's good teams that do it. The last team to go undefeated on a homestand of 9 or more games was the 2015 Mets that Eric Hosmer's Royals beat in the World Series. They went 10-0 on a homestand in 2015. It just doesn't happen. I bet you in that time, a lot of teams went 8-2 or 8-1 on these stands or whatever it was. And you're like, man, that's an incredible homestand. 9-0, that was remarkable. I don't care who was playing.
Just keep in mind one thing, though, and here's the pessimistic part.
I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
The 99 Padres won 14 in a row, and they stunk.
You're right. You're right. That was Kraz wrote about that the other day.
He did. He wrote about this. He wrote about it this week. And just to point out that it can be a fluke. I do not believe for one second that this team is a fluke, and I don't think that that was a fluke in 1999. This is a good team.
Yes. I thought, generally speaking, there's exceptions to every rule.
Exactly.
And I apologize because I thought you were going to refute momentum. And Jay, no. I'm just going to say, coming out of San Francisco, Jace Tingler talked about one of his favorite words and that, you know, maybe that could build some momentum when they beat him. What was it that day? 11-1. They beat the Giants. And we're like, okay, yeah, huh? We'll see it. We'll believe it when we see it. And look what happened, Jay. I'm just saying, seems like that momentum even overcame the loss of Fernando Tatis Jr. and all those guys. Jay?
Just let me know when the momentum's going to end, though.
Brandon Woodruff or Corbin Burns, those guys could be momentum killers.
There you go. Kevin, we'll talk to you from Houston on Friday.
Thank you, everybody.